Hey, Mark here, and I just wanted to give you a quick notice before you started this Jurassic Park podcast, which will probably change your life. We had a few technical issues on this pod, which forced me to record on my internal mic. The sound is good, but it's not up to our normal sound quality. So if you're a first-time listener, if you're one of our regular listeners, just know that this is a one-off and the problem has been fixed, and we'll go back next week to listening to my beautiful, crisp, clear voice on this HD mic. But this pod was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it, and sorry for the slight echoey sound, which is totally listenable, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who spent his life savings when he bought a dinosaur from a black market sale. It's Robert Lamb.
It only cost me $10 million, too.
I mean, so you didn't even get a T-Rex. You didn't get a raptor. You got a compy. You got a tiny compy for $10 million.
That's still pretty cheap, though. I mean, this is a dinosaur.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's interesting? This is going to sound really random, but I was listening to a panel about the guy who worked on Nightmare Before Christmas, and they said that they sold a Jack Skellington, like one of the things that they use for the movie, for $10,000 at an auction. Everyone's like, holy crap, that's a lot of money. He's like, yeah, but that thing costs $100,000. So
Jesus Christ.
Even though you spent millions on this compy, I'd assume just the work and the genetics and digging. I mean, you have to dig for these. They have to pull everything out. Create it, ship it, capture it. They had to get it from a volcanic island that was exploding. Yep. So you got a good deal.
I think so. And I don't know how long they're supposed to live, but he's really cute.
Do you keep it caged up? Does it attack other animals?
It doesn't get along with my cat, but it does eat a lot of the insects in the house. It's kind of like a bat or something. You know what I mean? Like it eats like the mosquitoes and spiders, anything that gets inside the house.
Now, are you still wearing that eye patch?
Yeah, because that was an accident.
No, you said you were sleeping and it just bit your eye out.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of mean to it. I shocked it with like this little taser I had because it was being an asshole and getting on the counter. And then it just like, yeah, it attacked me in the middle of the night.
So you pulled a
Peter Stormare
from Jurassic Park 2, whatever, the Lost World.
Lost World,
and you
subtitle Jurassic Park.
Went off on your own into the woods,
yep,
and harassed some compies that were just doing their thing. And then you got lost when you were 20 feet away, and then you got attacked by
Dude,
and killed.
He went so far away to take a piss. When you're on Dinosaur Island, I'm not going that far into the jungle.
No. I mean, that's just a classic trope of film. Like, remember in Alien Covenant? The guy's like, get away from me. I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'm like, that's a bad idea.
Yeah. That's true. Or that lady went to go wash her face or something.
Yeah. She said that. Yeah. I'm going to go wash my face.
Like, you're in a pyramid, like some weird architecture that you don't know. Everything's run down. People have died around you. There's like bodies littered all around this architecture. And you're just like, I'm going to go off on my own in this dark hallway.
Well, movies have taught us that when you take cold water, it does feel great. But when you take cold water and brush it on your face, it's a cure-all.
It kind of like wakes you up and makes you feel good.
I used to make fun of that, but then I started doing it during the day. And I'm like, this is great.
Really? You do it every day?
Just kind of when I'm thinking about it, like if I went for a run,
and I was going to say after a nice jog.
Yeah. And I know I have to do something later, so I don't want to like shower yet. I'll just go do a nice quick, you know, I'll look like that, and then I'll just stare in the mirror really seriously after it. 'Cause that's what movie people do.
Yeah. Well, you got to contemplate life and your decisions you're about to make.
Yeah. And then I just kind of flap my hands off and I'm good.
Hey dude, if that's all it takes, then I'm going to start doing that more.
Yeah. I mean, you do go down a rabbit hole of deep thoughts. Like sometimes I've been perfectly fine when I do it. And then I wash my face and I do some deep thinking and it takes me to some dark places.
Do you ever peel your face off like the poltergeist?
No. I mean, I kind of, it melts
a little bit. Like Fright Night.
I was going to say Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, like the guy from Monty Python, the Holy Grail, I got better.
Okay.
Yeah, because he was turned into a newt, and he got better.
That's true.
So, I mean, I'm showing that to my students tomorrow in our class. So we're going over the 1970s in my film history class. And I was going to show another movie, but since none of them have ever watched a Monty Python film, I was like, yeah, we're doing Holy Grail.
They've never seen a Monty Python?
Or the skits. I mean, you know, like, I call them kids. Some are older than I am, but they've never watched the Monty Python movie. And that's fine, so I'm going to show it to them tomorrow, and it's going to be awesome.
How many people are in your class?
Well, I'm supposed to have 15, but it ranges from, like, 8 to 13 every class.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I guess that's an okay amount that haven't seen Monty Python.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I guess the only movie that I really freak out when people haven't watched is Deep Blue Sea, which is really weird. Remember back in the day when we were younger, and I'm like, you haven't seen the director's cut that was cut by the producers, which became the producer's director's cut of Donnie Darko?
Oh, shit, yeah.
And I would just be like, ugh.
Is there a director's cut of Deep Blue Sea?
No, there isn't. There isn't, because it's perfect.
Okay.
You know what Rennie Harlan did was he pulled the Alfred Hitchcock, where if Hitchcock's movie was 90 minutes, he'd film 93 minutes worth of footage. Rennie Harlan made his movie 108 minutes, and he only filmed 109 minutes of footage.
Holy shit. See, yep. So he knew. He knew how much he needed.
Yep. And so he just did exactly what he needed. And so when the studio was like, hey, we need to cut this, he's like, there's nothing to cut, fools.
He cut 1 minute.
Yeah, he's okay.
From the credits.
Yep, he just took out a minute of LL Cool J's song from the credits.
His hat is like a shark's fin, right?
I mean, it's literal. And it's really, if you watch the video, I'd love to write an article about this someday. He's just showing off his muscles, getting blasted by water, surrounded by women. Like, it wasn't a bad deal for LL Cool J to perform this song.
That's true. Did you watch Deep Blue Sea 2?
Yes, I did.
It's basically just a remake of Deep Blue Sea 1, right?
No. It's horribly lit. It's all just like red colors and blue colors because there's no budget. And it's full of a bunch of dum-dums on very cheap sets doing stupid things. And I'm glad I was doing other things while doing it. I was writing out articles or cleaning the dishes or, you know, living my life, go for a run, left it playing.
Right.
I couldn't sit through it. If you had to sit through that movie, you know, you'd have to go wash your face and go down a rabbit hole.
Just contemplate what you just did.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's bad. I wrote a review for it. It's on the site if anybody wants to read it. Movie Sums Up Flakes, Deep Blue Sea 2. It sucks.
Dang.
But you know what? That's a good segue into what we're talking about today, because Rennie Harlan, in that movie, ripped off the Jaws franchise. No, paid homage. Homage to the Jaws franchise. He made it very obvious. Like, he didn't hide any of it. He's like, he did Stranger Things before Stranger Things did Stranger Things. But Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park, another monster movie. Actually, Spielberg said it's not a monster movie.
Yeah, he said it's not. What did he call it? An adventure movie? Yeah, I don't know.
Like, a thriller? Because they're not monsters because they existed.
Right. He didn't want them to feel like monsters. He wanted them to feel more like animals. Like actual like creatures, you know, like not like the typical monster movies or even like any dinosaur movie up until that point that just wanted to eat everything. Like even in King Kong, like everything on Kong Island just wanted to kill those people.
Yeah,
these
raptors were just being raptors.
Right, exactly.
They were just rapping.
Well, there is a prelude to them about, you know, them being hunters and stuff, and that's what they do.
Yeah, so they can't be considered bad guys when the dum-dums are the ones who let them out.
Yeah, they cut the power.
Yep, good Newman, cut the power.
Cut the power.
I know.
He cut the power, but the raptors didn't escape right away. They didn't escape until, the power was about to be reset or whatever, like when they turned off all the systems.
Yep, and then the thing opened, and then, so Newman didn't let them out.
No, he didn't. He let the T-Rex out.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
All right, so this is what I'm thinking, Robert. This is your favorite movie ever made, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites. I remember when I was 9 years old seeing it in the theater. No, 93 it came out. I was 11 years old.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And
I was six.
Nice. And I don't think you were probably too young, but I got dropped off, and me and three of my buddies watched it. And just sitting in a theater, you know, with a couple of your buddies with no supervision watching Jurassic Park is just a great memory.
which it was the first movie to be filmed, or where they used the Dolby surround sound too,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and then Spielberg was like, yeah, the theaters need DTS to show this.
Yep.
And, all right, so here's what I'm thinking. We don't need to go through this movie play by play. Let's just kind of go through and talk about some cool stuff. Is that
right?
Like, because we don't need to replay Jurassic Park for people.
Well, I feel like most people have seen Jurassic Park. It's, you know, like you said, it came out in 93. But I did read – I read an article on IGN, I want to say like last year or something. They published an article, and it said basically that Jurassic Park was for kind of like my generation what Star Wars was to that generation. Like, you know what I mean? Like this huge blockbuster – that like came out and just wowed audiences, like exceeded expectations, brought like fantasy and wonder like to the big screen. Like seeing a dinosaur on screen was like amazing, because up until that point they always looked cheap and fake, like in the old, like I said, King Kong or the one with Raquel Welch, then, Journey to the Center of the Earth.
And then Carnosaur, right? I believe that
Carnosaur.
Was,
yeah.
Was that before or after?
No. I think Carnosaur was after.
Got it.
I can't remember.
Well, what you're saying is absolutely right. I mean, even the King Kong from, what, the late 70s, they just looked like giant animatronic creatures.
Puppets, yeah.
And you know what I love about Jurassic Park is they originally wanted to have, like, Phil Tippett was brought in to make the greatest stop-motion things ever,
mm-hmm.
known to man. But then they learned about ILM and the computer graphics. And Phil Tippett, you know, he's like, hey, Phil, we're not going to do stop-motion. We're going to do this. And then that's when really, like, that's when everything took a massive step up as far as computer. I mean, they had T2, they had Abyss, but just, right. You know, CGI went improved by leaps and bounds with this movie.
It's amazing. Like, yeah, some of it does look a little dated nowadays, but it still holds up surprisingly well when you, like, watch a lot of new movies and the CGI, like, the CGI to me in Jurassic World looks worse than the first Jurassic Park. And I'm like, how does that happen?
I love that we're still asking ourselves that question 25 years later.
Yeah.
Because I am just watching it now just for this. You know what's funny? I feel like I take this movie for granted. I think every time I watch it, I'm like, this movie is amazing. But then when I don't watch it, I'm like, yeah, Jurassic Park's good. I think right. It's so good, you take it for granted.
Yeah. It's for me, like, because I watch it, I remember watching it, I saw it, like, probably 4 or 5 times in theaters when it came out. I was 6 years old. I went with my mom. My mom doesn't really like horror movies, and she was kind of scared, like, what was it going to be? Like, because obviously, you know, the trailers are showing dinosaurs attacking people and stuff. But, like, we went and my mom loved it. My dad loved it. I loved it. All my friends loved it. I went back with certain friends to go watch it. It was just like, I don't know. I was just in awe, especially of like the funny thing with Steven Spielberg is that like in Jaws, he like didn't show the shark right away. Right. Like that was the big thing is you see a fin here, water thrashing. That's about it until later on in the movie. And this one, after you introduce all the characters, you see the Brachiosaurus, like just huge dinosaur. Now he doesn't show the meat eating the carnivorous dinosaurs right away, but he shows like the Brachiosaurus like right away when they get to the island. And I just remember being like in awe of that.
Oh yeah, that cool scene with the water. And I love how people were calling him out. They're like, Brachiosaurus just couldn't stand like that. And they're like, shut up. We just thought it would look cool.
Yeah, exactly.
And Spielberg brought in a bunch of paleontologists and he kind of listened to him, but he also didn't. When they were like, that would never happen, he's like, shut up, I'm Steven Spielberg, I want this. So,
because you got to keep it kind of like movie-ish. Yeah.
But you're right, though. They showed this massive Brachiosaurus. And you know what? They even showed – did they show the – was the T-Rex before or after the attack by the Dilophosaurus?
So the T-Rex, I believe, was before the Dilophosaurus. It was right after – or let me see. The T-Rex attacks the vehicles, and then right after, like that all finishes, I think we cut to Dennis Nedry trying to make his escape, and then they show the Dilophosaurus.
Got it. And so this is going to sound weird, but now that I'm older and I've had some workplace experience, I love the interactions between Nedry, Wayne Knight, Arnold, Sam Jackson, and Hammond by Richard Attenborough. Like they are a dysfunctional workplace.
Yep.
They're yelling at each other. Obviously Hammond and Nedry have gotten into massive arguments in the past where they draw each other into argument. It's a toxic relationship. And I hate that word, tie. It's a weird relationship they have going on inside this inner workings of Jurassic Park.
Well, you know, it's funny because like you like Deep Blue Sea a lot, and Deep Blue Sea, remember they go down to a skeleton crew over the weekend or whatever. Yeah. So it's just like there's only a few people there. Whereas the same thing kind of happens in Jurassic Park, where this hurricane's about to hit and a lot of people leave the island and stuff. And there's just kind of like this small crew that are there, including Hammond, Arnold,
Nedry,
and then Robert Muldoon. Yep. So it's like that's pretty much it for like the work crew.
And they're just yelling at each other.
Right.
Like, I love that scene, though. There's a scene, though, where Nedry's just sucking down Coke and eating candy, and him and Hammond are just yelling at each other.
Yeah.
They're yelling at each other about, what is it, the automatic locks or the lights aren't coming on? Yep. He's like, well, I could do it now, but that would take up a lot of RAM, which would prevent this from happening. So I'll just do it in the morning.
Yeah. And then Muldoon and John Arnold, which is Sam Jackson, like, is kind of just annoyed with him, too. And just like, come on, like, just stop. Ray Arnold. Sorry, not John Arnold.
Yeah. And then, I love when Muldoon just goes, shut up. They're at the T-Rex paddock. Like, he can tell his boss to shut up because those two probably argue all the time.
Yep.
Because if you think about it, Nedry, I mean, the internet had been around, but this is 93. So with all of this going on, computer technology, I know the 80s, real genius and all that, war games, but Hammond knew nothing about computers.
Right.
And then you have Sam Jackson, who later on goes, I hate this hacker shit. And I, give me a password, please.
God damn it.
Yeah, so then you have Sam Jackson, who hates this hacker stuff. And so basically, Nedry holds the keys to the park.
Yep, because he's able to shut it all down.
And I love when they're looking for him, and he goes, check the vending machines. And I don't think they meant it as a slight to his weight. I just think they always find him there. Like,
right.
Does that make sense? Like, they know where he is. I don't think it was an attack on him.
Well, also, when Arnold goes over there and, like, clears off his desk, you see all the wrappers and junk cans. And he's even drinking a soda at one point, like, talking to Hammond.
He's guzzling Coke.
Yeah, but that's like his thing is like he's supposed to like the cool thing about Jurassic Park is there is a human villain, which is basically Nedry, but he's not like your typical villain. Like a lot of times there'll be like villains in like these horror movies who like want to harness the dinosaurs, which actually comes later on in the Jurassic Park series. But he was like just this guy who wanted to make some money on the side. So he was just going to sell these embryos and that's all he wanted. And he was kind of this jokey, kind of goofy, nerdy villain.
He never planned on anybody dying.
Right. And right. Also, he didn't want that.
Like you see, like when he deals with the Dilophosaurus. I mean, I'm gonna tell you, Robert, if I saw a Dilophosaurus while it was raining in the mountains, I'm dead.
Yeah.
I would climb a tree.
that was some of the liberties that Steven Spielberg took was the whole Carnosaurus spitting. I mean, that was in the Michael Crichton novel also. But obviously, Dilophosaurus doesn't do that. They don't have a venom spit gland that they know of. So, like, they kind of took some liberties with that. But I thought, that's a cool scene.
Yeah, but if you see that in the wild, Robert, are you just going to be like, I don't have any food. Get out of here.
Well, no. And it's the way he interacts with it because he, like you said, John Hammond doesn't know about computers. Dennis Nedry doesn't really know about dinosaurs. Yeah. And, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And he wasn't worried about it. So I don't think he knew what he was doing. He probably thought they were just large creatures. And he wrote off a monster that just, he died horribly, Nedry.
Oh, yeah. Dude, in the book, because I've read the book a couple times too. And like in the book, it's like one of the most disgusting deaths where like it talks about Dennis Nedry feeling his intestines come out of his body as it slashed him open and stuff like that. It was like gruesome. Like he died a gruesome death.
Probably grabbed onto him and like bit him and then its back claws just sliced him wide open.
Right.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
That was a horrible death.
Well, and that's, that's movie magic where you just see him go into the car. He thinks he's safe. And then all of a sudden the little snake rattle as like you see the frills pop up and then he just gets attacked.
How did that Dilophosaurus get into the Jeep? Because did it jump into the Jeep and then go into the passenger side and wait?
No, I think that's what happened. But I think that there is more than one Dilophosaurus. So he's dealing with the one that's down there, and then he gets up there, and there's another one already in the car.
Clever girl.
Yeah, see?
Hey, that's fun.
I mean, that's what I think. I'm not positive, but they never said anything about there just being one.
Oh, do you want to hear about how they – so the Dilophosaurus, they got it by using swan and rattlesnake noises?
See, I knew it was part rattlesnake.
And then get this, the raptor. So they had horse when it breathed. They had goose noises. And then they also got the majority of them by tortoises having sex.
Oh, my God. That's
so
awesome.
A guy waited around for these two tortoises to hook up, and then he like captured all the sound. He said it takes a long time.
Did he wait around, or did he try to spark something between them?
Oh, no, he put some music on, he put some love songs on, he put some tortoise love
some
songs
Barry,
on.
Some Barry White.
Yeah, some Barry White. He lowered the lights down in the pen.
Technically, he could play something by the Turtles. just kidding.
Wait, Imagine Me and You.
Yeah,
you and me, so he played that, and then the Turtles just did it, and he recorded their noises. The T-Rex is a Jack Russell Terrier and a baby elephant. The Brachiosaurus is a donkey, a whale, a blowhole from a whale, and a fire hydrant noise. And then Triceratops is cattle. And what I learned today, the Rancor from Return of the Jedi, that noise was made from a Chihuahua slowed down.
Oh, wow.
So they slowed down a Chihuahua's bark and grunt. And they slowed it down, and that's how the Rancor made its noise.
Well, you want to know something else? When I watched Avatar, the creatures that they introduced in Avatar, I was like, these sound really familiar. And it turns out that a lot of the animal noises in Avatar were actually taken from Jurassic Park. Ooh. Like the dinosaur noises.
I mean,
they're really similar.
Stevens, a lot of people talk about this movie. And the one thing I love is Phil Tippett, was brought in to be the guy who did the stop motion. And Kathleen, I love the story he told. He's like, yeah, Kathleen Kennedy calls me up. She's like, hey, you want to come to Hawaii and do this dinosaur movie with Spielberg? It's going to be a lot of fun. And Phil Tippett sounds exactly like I did when I was in the industry. He's like, yeah, right. He's like, I'll do it, but it's not going to be fun. Because he's like, Spielberg's going to kick his butt. Uh-huh. And so Phil Tippett, I don't know. I thought, but this is also a random thing. You know what he was labeled in the credits?
What?
He was called the dinosaur supervisor. And a meme came out. They're like, you're one job, Phil. You're one job.
I do remember seeing that. Yeah, all the dinosaurs got out because of you.
Yeah, and then Phil was interviewed by IO9, I believe it is. And he was like, it's stupid. It's a waste of time. He's just a grumpy dude. But I just love that. It's, well, you're one job, Phil. But
this screwed it all up.
The crews on this movie. I mean, what's insane about this, what I love most is, these people got their butts kicked on this film because everything was brand new. That scene where they had the water going up and down, you know, like Steven Spielberg was listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire one day in his car, and he saw his water move, and he's like, I want that in Jurassic Park. And they had no idea how to figure it out until the night before when a guy started messing around with guitar strings.
Yeah.
Like, people are losing sleep. And also, you know, Spielberg was shooting Schindler's List while he was looking at the visual effects of Jurassic Park.
That's why 93 is like Spielberg's best year, because not only does he make the highest grossing film of all time up to that point with Jurassic Park, but he also directs Schindler's List and wins an Oscar for it, and it wins Best Picture or whatever. So that was just like a great year for him.
Oh yeah, he had two movies win multiple Oscars.
Yeah.
But imagine working on heavy scenes with Ralph Fiennes, right? And then coming back and being like, yeah, the Velociraptor doesn't have enough stripes.
Dinosaurs, yeah.
Your headspace has to, like, he said he hated Jurassic Park towards the end of it. I watched his documentary on HBO, and he was like, I was like, I don't know why I did it. He's like, it was stupid. But also, I did the math on this movie, and the budget was only, with inflation, $111 million. I mean, that's like $90 million less than Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
Counting inflation.
Right. That's crazy.
And also, it made $1.7 billion worldwide and $787 million domestically.
Jesus.
I mean, that's,
domestically, it was that was crazy. That's a huge amount.
That beat out Avengers Infinity War. And I think it even beat out, like, Black Panther. This movie was – I don't think it beat Avatar or Force Awakens, but it was a massive, massive hit. I know the toys too. I liked Muldoon a lot. Muldoon was my homeboy.
That's why he was my favorite character, not only in the book but the movie. Like I liked his portrayal. Like I said, like I I read Jurassic Park, the book, after I watched the movie, probably like 5 years after I watched the movie. I love the movie. I remember it came out on VHS, and I bought it on VHS, and I watched it so many times as a kid that the VHS, the top of it started melting away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I eventually had to buy another one, but they released like a special edition, like when Lost World came out, so I just bought like those two films together or whatever.
Nice. Yeah, I remember my Jurassic Park VHS. That would a great logo too for it.
Mm-hmm.
The score, the logo.
John Williams, yeah.
Everybody was working on their A game on this movie.
Dude, I liked, and that's the thing is, watching it, even now, like, I really didn't know who, like, Sam Neill, Laura Dern, well, especially as a kid, I didn't know who any of those people were. So it was, like, kind of weird seeing all these new faces. I was like, I don't know any of these characters. Obviously, now I know some of them, but still, like, even Sam Neill, like, he's not, like, a huge actor. Like, if you ask people who Sam Neill is, not everybody's going to know.
Oh, he's
same
that guy
with Laura
from
Dern.
The Mouth of Madness.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Sometimes they'll just be like, that's the guy from Jurassic Park, and that's it. Like, that's all I know. Everyone knows Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
And obviously Richard Attenborough was big just because he's an older actor, so a lot of older people knew Richard Attenborough. But there wasn't, like – I kind of liked it, though. Like, I liked that it was, like, these people. It wasn't, like, Jurassic Park starring Tom Hanks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know what I noticed? My wife is a big fan of this artist called Karen Hallian. And she does – she actually just hit it big. Like, she just, like, went viral for all of her pictures of – like, she'll draw – she did, like, a picture of Buffy and wrote Slay. She did a picture of Wonder Woman and wrote Wonder. Really cool art prints. But she has one of Ellie that's selling out. And that line that she says, what, men create dinosaurs kill men, women inherit the earth.
Yeah.
Like, that's become a very popular line 25 years later. And that she's a that's cool awesome. Character in that movie. She, you know, she doesn't have the high heels. She turns on the thing. She deals with the raptors. Her reaction to raptors is believable.
Right.
I don't know. I just liked her a lot in this movie.
So, like, not to, like, do a book to film adaptation or whatever, but like in the book, I remember it was Alan Grant and Ellie was kind of like his protege. Like he was teaching her about paleontology and stuff like that. I think she was still maybe a botanist as well, but like I think she was just more of his protege. Whereas in the movie, they kind of added in this kind of almost love interest, but it's not like a, like, they don't kiss at the end or anything like that. Like, it's not overdone. Like, I felt like they did that with Jurassic World, and it just kind of didn't blend well, you know, with Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. Like, I kind of liked it how they, you know, the dinosaurs were the star of Jurassic Park, even though they had all these other characters. But the characters weren't, like, nobodies. Like, they were three-dimensional, I feel. Like, the most three-dimensional you can get for this type of adventure movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the scene where Ellie is dealing with the poop.
Mm-hmm.
She just like so that one scene. She puts the gloves on. She's squatting down. She has some like poop on her leg. She doesn't care about it. And she's lost in thought about the what this poop is. And then mm-hmm. she's messing with Alan about the kids.
Yeah.
And you know like
and Jeff Goldblum's hitting on her like in the car
incessantly.
Right.
He's been married three times too and has three kids.
And he mentions that to Alan Grant as they drive back together, which I kind of like because that's actually in the book where she stays back with that guy who was there with the Triceratops. His name was Dr. Harding. And she stays with him and they go and drive through the park to get back to the visitor center while the rest of them go on the trip or whatever. And like you have this awkward moment between like Alan Grant and Jeff Goldblum as Jeff Goldblum is kind of asking like, so is she single? Is she available kind of thing?
Yeah, he's
and nope.
He's squirrely in the not squirrely in this movie, but he's rakish in this one.
Oh
they,
yeah.
I think they called him. I was listening to a making of documentary, and they said he's lecherous.
Lecherous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. He's like one of my favorite characters from the movie. Like he's great too. Like just his mannerisms. I mean, it's Jeff Goldblum, so obviously he's got like the way he talks that everybody like you know his laugh and everything. But like the way he talks about chaos theory. And he's actually got some serious points. I think it's like it's a cool character.
And he's not turned up to 11 like he is now.
Right.
He's not Jeff Goldblum as we know it.
Yeah, no, I felt like this was Jeff Goldblum before he became like the Jeff Goldblum that everybody just kind of knows now.
Or wants, if that
right.
makes sense.
Right. Like everybody wants that goofy like Thor Ragnarok kind of Goldblum.
Oh, one thing I like a lot is when Sam Neill is or Grant, when he's on the helicopter and he doesn't know how to attach his seatbelt when he has the two mm-hmm. like the two what I guess we'd call it female ends of the seatbelts.
Yep.
And he's just clonking them together. Like, well, so he's an aloof guy, I guess. He's just lost in his work.
But you know, and this could be fake. I read somewhere online that actually alludes to what's going to happen, in the sense of he's got two female ends of the seatbelt and he can't connect them, but he ties it together, kind of how all the dinosaurs in the park are female, but somehow they find a way.
Whoa. Do you think they did that on purpose?
I don't know, but I read that somewhere and I'm like, that's really good. That's actually interesting.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, like you think about it, it's two female ends too. It could have easily been two male. Well, no, I guess it wouldn't have been, but it was two female ends, and he's like trying to connect them, and he can't get it, and then finally he just ties them together.
And then he found a way.
Yeah. Now I don't know if they meant it that way, but out of all like you know like movies, especially on the internet, they always have like these kind of you know what if it was meant to be this or whatever. But this one actually made some sense.
Or I think a prop guy wouldn't mess up on a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah, I know. And I like it could have just been played for laughs, kind of like jokey, but it actually kind of makes sense, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, this but, I'm telling you, dude, there's so much in this movie that I just take for granted.
Yeah, the older I got too, like I noticed that as much as I love the dinosaur scenes, I also love, like you said, like where they're just in the office arguing to each other, or when Hammond and Ellie are sitting over ice cream talking about like the flea circus. Like I kind of liked that. I liked that Hammond wanted to build a park just for amazement. He wanted to show this beauty to like kids of all ages. That's why he told the lawyer, like, this isn't meant for the super rich. I want everybody to enjoy this park. He was kind of like a child at heart.
The problem is though, you know, I think that was really smart. And Spielberg said he cast him to show that kind of naivety. And then at the end, he kind of realizes what he has done.
Right.
But I like when he says, I want everyone to enjoy it. Then the guy's like, yeah, we'll do one a day, where you, 1 year, 1 day out of the year.
Where yeah, you can a do coupon day.
Because to own an island on Costa Rica and have a staff and insurance and upkeep and animals, I mean, you have to charge an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, definitely.
You have to pay at least $1,000 to go to this park. There's no way.
Like, yeah.
I mean, look at Jurassic World with that Mosasaurus tank. That's billions of dollars.
Right.
So,
dude, like it would cost. Yeah, it would cost so much that like, I mean, obviously he had the childlike wonder, but that's why the lawyer was there to sign off on the park to make sure everything was in working order. But also like he realized that it was going to cost a lot to see this stuff.
So, I mean, even the guy that has that wonder, like you said, the childlike wonder, that he still doesn't get it.
He even said the lawyer even says or Gennaro is his name, but Gennaro says we're gonna make a fortune with this place. Like after he sees the Brachiosaurus, like he knows.
Do you think a park would last with no carnivorous creatures?
I think so. I think anybody would be like that. That was my one gripe about Jurassic World, is the fact that it takes place like 10 years after. Or 20 years, 15 years, I don't know. It's less than 20 years after the original park or whatever. But the problem – 15 years. I'll figure this out. Anyways, but the people are already bored with dinosaurs. And it's like, I don't know if 15 years is enough. People still go to the zoo and are in awe of elephants and stuff. Like they love feeding giraffes still. I know it's not still that childlike wonder like when you're a kid and seeing an elephant for the first time. But I think people would still go see any kind of dinosaur.
I mean, when I'm walking around and I see a hawk, I'm amazed by it.
That's what I'm saying. If I saw,
you know what I mean?
Dude, there's a raccoon outside my house for like weeks. It just kept showing up, and I was like, awesome, it's a raccoon. I would like go take pictures of it and stuff. And I've seen raccoons plenty of times, but to see one by my house, I'm like, this is cool.
I mean, just to see a triceratops, I'd lose my mind.
Right. Yeah.
Or stegosaurus. So many,
yeah, stegosaurus, ankylosaurus. Any of the long-necked dinosaurs, like I know I used to really like look up dinosaurs like Diplodocus and Apatosaurus and Brachiosaurus and all of them. Like I would be amazed to see any of those.
Yeah.
I think obviously, you know, people want to see the lion at the zoo, right? King of the jungle. So people would want to see a T-Rex. I don't think in all honesty that it would be – like how often do you ever hear about a lion escaping a zoo? It doesn't happen that often.
Yeah. I know a female lion just killed the lion that gave her her two cubs the other day.
Oh, really? Where?
In a zoo somewhere. She's killed a, dude lion.
Damn. I know there was over here, I think it was in, because I'm in St. Petersburg near Tampa, and I think it was in, not Orlando, maybe Dade City, that there was a lion that actually did escape the cage. This was probably like 6 or 7 years ago, but it escaped. They eventually found it, but it was just like they were telling people like to be careful driving, you know, stay in your homes kind of stuff. But they eventually found it and I guess tranked it or whatever they do.
Man, that would break my heart if the lion died because it escaped.
I don't think they killed it. I think they were able to trank it, but like I think they were just worried about it maybe like, you know, attacking someone or something.
Got it.
But I think, like, if you have this park with dinosaurs, like, I know Jurassic Park's a movie, and, like, you have to have the dinosaurs escape, otherwise there's not much of a movie. But the fact that their skeleton crew consisted of, like, two computer guys, John Hammond, and one park, like, ranger, like, you think that they would have a few more people there to, like, round out. Like, you know, just in case the raptors did get out, you're going to have more than just one park ranger.
Yeah, if that T-Rex gets out, it's game over.
Well, that's actually why I like the book. In the book, it's actually – it was interesting. Nedry shuts down the power. There's a storm coming or whatever, but there's still a lot of people on the island, like a lot of park workers and everything. And Nedry shuts down the power, and like halfway through the book, they eventually get the power back on. And they start putting the dinosaurs back into their cages. Like all these rangers are coming out and like corralling them back into the cages, both like the vegetarian, like the herbivores and the carnivores. And then finally, like the power goes out again and they realize that they were running out. They were running on auxiliary power and they didn't realize that. So the power goes out again. And then that's when dinosaurs, like the raptors and stuff get out and like start attacking people. And they actually attacked like a bunch of people like in the different like the labs and stuff like that because there's still a lot of people there.
Is there a scene where the T-Rex swims? Because I read the book too, but I read it probably in like 98, 20 years ago.
So I don't remember if it swam. I know it follows Grant and the kids while they're in a raft, which was going to be part of the movie at one point, where like they're on a raft in a river like trying to get away, and I think maybe it goes underwater or something like that and like comes out, because they kind of recreated it in Jurassic Park 3 with the Spinosaurus, but I don't remember if he actually swam or just went into the water or attacked him from the river.
Got it.
I do remember that Robert Muldoon, the game warden, and Donald Gennaro lived too, the lawyer. And Donald Gennaro was actually a pretty strong guy. He was a lawyer, but he was like a decent guy, and he would go with Robert Muldoon around the park to try to capture the T-Rex. And they actually saw the T-Rex when it was attacking the raft at one point. They didn't know it was attacking the raft, but they saw it like trying to reach the river. So they started shooting at it and attacked them. And Robert Muldoon actually ends up getting like a grenade launcher and shooting raptors and stuff. And Gennaro helps him. And I was like, this is awesome.
Dude, I love the death scene of Muldoon though is great because He doesn't go down like a chump. He goes down. I think there's naivety to how smart these things are. They didn't see what they were capable of. I mean, they aren't genetically modified. So when that raptor sneaks up on him, and he just gives it props, clever girl. And then he dies horribly. But
honestly, it's like probably like my favorite death scene in any movie. Right? Like I love the way he just takes it.
He gets it.
Yeah.
He's like, respect.
Yeah, he knew. There's nothing he can do in that moment that's going to help. Like, he knows the moment he budges, the raptor's going to be on him. And he does. He tries to move at the last second, but the raptor's already on him. And he knew that. That's why he said, clever girl. That's all he could get out.
Is this true that you spent 2 years of your life working out your legs so that they would look like Bob Peck's from the movie?
His shorts in that movie, that guy is amazing, man.
He's got some leg cannons.
Dude, he's got short beige shorts. He was an English actor, right? And yeah. He like did a lot of plays. I don't know if he was in a lot of movies, but he ended up getting cast in that. And then I don't remember him in any other movie.
You know those movies that show off people's arms? It's like gratuitous arm shots. He had gratuitous leg shots.
Dude, I remember when he's talking about the raptors after they eat that bull or cow or whatever, and he like he just like hangs one leg on like a bar, and you just see like his powerful leg muscles just protruding like through his shorts too, like his short game warden shorts.
I thought it was awesome. There aren't enough gratuitous leg shots.
That's true. Oh, and male, a man.
I mean, legs. I guess women have tons of them.
Yeah, but man's legs.
Yeah. The world needs more gratuitous man legs. Well, JCVD tried his best in the 90s.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, cool. But still, I don't know.
Hey, how about this? Let's research these shots, and we'll be right back to talk more Jurassic Park. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. You know, there's basically just Muldoon in the 90s for the leg shots. That's probably the best one.
Yeah, I didn't see any others. None that caught my eye. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got it. Now, hey, I got to ask you a really important question.
Yes.
All right. Why did nobody eat the Chilean sea bass?
I know. It's not only that. Like, they sat down, they put the plates down, and literally, like, after they have their little talk about who's going to visit the park and slapping stuff on lunchboxes, they just decide, like, that's it. Let's go see raptors eat.
I mean, I...
No. Actually, that was after the raptors ate. They wanted to go on the trucks, the cars, and get on their little tour.
I mean, I've had sea bass. I don't mind it. And the presentation looked very nice.
It was like a weird room, though. Where were they? Because there's like a projector screen behind them.
Yeah, I think they just kind of retrofitted that for the visit.
Right. So, there's a lot of advertising in Jurassic Park about Jurassic Park.
So, do you think... It wasn't a knock on the Chilean sea bass. It was just they wanted to go see other things.
They were just – I think once you see that Brachiosaurus, man, you just want to see everything else. Even though he was worried – Alan Grant was worried about the raptors and T-Rex.
Yeah. So the chef won't be insulted.
I don't think so. I think it's more of an – now, if that happens all the time, then who knows? But as long as, you know, customers actually pay for it, who cares?
Oh, yeah, you're right. All right, and also – does Hammond have to be on every tour that he gives to...
That's the weirdest thing, right?
So every single tour that people come on, he has to be there for.
So there's like that part where they get on that little moving stadium seated track or whatever, where they like are looking at people working in the lab and stuff. And he does this presentation with, you know, that cartoon DNA, and he's got to poke... like the finger of himself on the screen, and it's like, is he going to be there for every iteration of that ride?
I mean, he wants – you know what I was thinking? They also set something up later on. They have B.D. Wong there, and there's a scene where Hammond's like, why didn't you tell me? I need to be here for every egg opening. So they're already showing that B.D. Wong is kind of rogue because he does That's Jurassic true. World and Fallen Kingdom.
But I never got the whole evil scientist from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe it was the outcropping or the beginning of his becoming an evil scientist. Because he was he was secretive in Jurassic World. That's what led to the bit. Well, they're a bunch of idiots, but also he was secretive. So in this one, he seemed like he wasn't going to tell him about this egg.
Yeah, why do you want to, like, if you bring a – and maybe this was on CinemaSins as well, but if you want to, like, make a new dinosaur – to like show off to the public because they want to see something bigger with sharper teeth. Why did you make it able to camouflage?
Don't get me started on Jurassic World.
I know.
I don't think Fallen Kingdom was written by a human.
Yeah, Fallen Kingdom was very hard to follow. Like not even follow, just like I just it was hard to invest myself into it.
I remember when Claire and them were yelling at him about the dinosaurs, and the guy's like, "Wait, you were the head of this place for the longest time," and then. Well, and then the guy's like, you trained raptors for the military. What do you think was going to happen?
But it's not even that. It's like Claire and Owen, like, traded spots. Like, in Jurassic World, he was all about the dinosaurs. She was about money and stuff like that. And then they switched. And then she was all about saving the dinosaurs in Fallen Kingdom. And he was all like, no, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. It's like, so after the first one, they, like, just switch roles?
Yeah.
She never cared about the dinosaurs.
No. There was let's go back to a good movie.
Okay, sorry. The first one.
You know what's funny? I'm like, don't get me started. Yeah, the first one.
although we just did talk about, because I saw Halloween, the new one today, and that kind of rebooted the series because it's supposed to be a sequel after the original Halloween from 1978 or whatever. I wonder if they'll ever do a reboot after all these Jurassic World movies and do a Jurassic Park 2 that takes place actually after Jurassic Park 1 and ignore the rest of the canon.
Ooh, that'd be amazing. That's the only way they can go now.
Well, I think that's what they were trying to do with Jurassic World. That's why they only made allusions to the first one, and they didn't really talk about The Lost World or Jurassic Park 3, really. But, like, I think eventually they'll do it again and restart.
Oh, wait. So now, you know what's stupid? I was watching Jurassic Park again. I'm like, this guy put a park on an island with an active volcano.
Yeah, but...
That's canon now.
I know, but that's so weird. Like, why would they do... I don't know.
That's canon. Like,
it's only 10 years after the other one, and then all of a sudden it erupts. It's like, what if people were there during that?
I mean, these volcanoes, they don't just – there's no dormant, and then they're like, surprise.
But also Site B, is that canon?
Yeah.
From The Lost World?
Yeah. So what's going on that island?
Yeah. Why not move all the dinosaurs to that island?
And when they let the dinosaurs out at the end of Fallen Kingdom, you know how many humans are going to die?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, well, spoilers. That was the little girl's
fault.
Yeah. I'm going to – spoilers, she's a clone.
Yeah, that was weird, too.
Oh, you know what we haven't talked about at all is the kids in this movie. They're awesome. Ariana Richards and Joseph Mazzello, Lex and Tim. They're the best little acting kids. Like, Spielberg gets such great performances out of kids.
I usually hate, like, kids in movies because it's really hard to find one that's going to be, like – I feel like they can actually act. There's not, like – there's a lot of movies I've seen where kids just – it just doesn't feel like they're really acting, and it is – like it makes me cringe. But this one worked. Like they felt real to me.
I loved when he was following Sam Neill around. Grant. Grant. When he's following Grant around and he's just talking about, hey, what car are you in? Well, whatever car you're at. Like he's just a nice kid.
Yeah, he just liked dinosaurs, and he read his book, and he's just like, I just want to know more about you and dinosaurs.
And then Lex was a solid hacker.
Yeah.
They seem like resourceful kids.
It worked out, too, because, like, yeah, like, she was able to help out at the end when they, like, you know. And they talked about that during, you know, while they're walking through the park. They talked about her hacker skills and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it plays out later on when the raptors are raptors are trying to break into that one room.
I love the direction that she got from Spielberg when she had to lock the raptor in the freezer.
What was that?
Spielberg was just like, be terrifying. You're saving your brother and you're just going crazy. That's why she runs forward with her arms out and just jacks that door. Like she goes nuts and she just levels that thing. Like Spielberg told her to do that. Like you're saving your brother and you're going alpha.
So this is interesting too. There's only three raptors on the island.
Yeah.
So, because Robert Muldoon talks about that, where he says the dominant one killed all but two of the others. So that means there's three. They locked one in the freezer, and then the other two get attacked by the T-Rex. So now there shouldn't be any raptors on that island. Like if they went back to that island, they wouldn't have to deal with any raptors.
Yeah, I mean those eggs wouldn't be doing anything.
Yeah, and even if they hatch, they're stuck in like a lab.
Huh.
Like, I don't think they're going to, like, break out or anything. So I always thought, like, if they went back to that island after that one, that they wouldn't have to deal with any raptors, just the T-Rex.
Didn't they find eggs, though, that were hatched?
Yeah, but I don't think those were raptors because the raptors were in their own pen. I think those were, like, Gallimimus because that's when they saw the flock of Gallimimus. Mm. So I assume that that's the enclosure that they were in. And then that's how the T-Rex, like, broke into there and attacked one of the Gallimimus while they were there. That's what I assume.
That raptor is going to freeze to death, Robert.
I know. Yeah, hey, maybe he'll be frozen and then they'll take him out and then he'll unfreeze like in that remake of The Thing or whatever.
If it doesn't freeze to death, it's going to suffer just a horrifying starvation death.
No, it's got a lot of meat in there.
Oh, yeah. So it's still going to die eventually, right?
Yeah, I mean, eventually it won't be able to get out. It'll probably still slam against the door a bunch of times, but I don't think it'll break through.
Man, that's horrible.
I know.
I mean, but, the raptor's just being a raptor.
Dude, I remember that part in the kitchen when the raptor, like, goes to attack Ariana Richards as she's, like, closing the stove. Like, I remember seeing, like, people jump during that part when it slams into the stove.
I still jump.
Yeah. It looks so real, like he's about to attack her. And you're like, he can't. It's a kid. Steven Spielberg's not going to let a kid die in this movie. But, like, even then, it's still, like, shocking, like when it like gets right there and then you realize it was a reflection.
I wrote an article and we did a podcast about the best kitchen fights, and I included that on this. It's one of the greatest kitchen encounters of cinema.
It's really tense.
It's either that or Sudden Death, where JCVD has a like 5 minute long fight with a mascot.
I don't think I saw that.
Just type in Sudden Death JCVD fights mascot. It's glorious.
I'll check that out. Now, I love a good kitchen fight.
Now, there's a couple of things we want to talk about with the T-Rex, but I love at the end when the T-Rex comes out of nowhere, and saves the day. And one of the guys working on it was like, Steven, like, where's this T-Rex come from? He's like, he's just there. He's like, this is a movie for kids. Like, I don't care.
Well, that's what, like, okay, so I heard that the T-Rex wasn't supposed to be there, like, something was supposed to happen, like they kill the raptors and then escape or something. But then, yeah, Steven Spielberg wanted the T-Rex because he felt like the T-Rex was kind of like the star. He wanted the T-Rex to kill the raptors so they could escape. Now, I've watched this movie a lot of times. I always wondered, where did the T-Rex come from? If you look behind the T-Rex as they're running out, there's actually a big gap in the wall. And the gap in the wall, like, it goes outside. You can see, like, the trees and stuff, is because when they first get to the visitor center, you'll see a lot of people still working on it. Like, they're still building parts of it. They're painting parts inside. They're, like, just a lot of construction going on. And there are, like, tarps hanging off the side. So I assume that that's where he comes from, is he comes through this big, like, kind of gaping hole in the side and attacks. Now, why they didn't hear him approach when they've heard him approach every other time, who knows? Maybe – you know, movie magic. Like, they're so intent on, like, trying to avoid the raptors, they're not even paying attention.
And
I don't know.
When watching this movie, did you notice how Spielberg shot it in 1.85 to 1? So he shot it in, like, a full screen to make the dinosaurs look huge. He didn't want to play around with widescreen.
Yeah.
That's such a smart idea. Because the dinosaurs, I'm watching it before we do this, the dinosaurs look massive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, especially – and like I said, like, the CGI, when the T-Rex chases, which this is my favorite scene in the movie, is when the T-Rex chases Robert Muldoon, Ellie, and Jeff Goldblum, and Malcolm, as he's, like, in the back. And, like, T-Rex comes out of the woods. He's like, must go faster. Like, that part, that's all CGI, but it looks so real.
Yeah, and he hits, like, the tree, and you have the good gag about the closer than they appear.
Yeah, and then he, like, even there's, like, a part where, like, the T-Rex, like, swipes his head against the truck, and you see, like, Ellie and Malcolm, like, get hit and, like, kind of push to the side kind of thing. But it's such, like, a tense scene and, like, so scary. And, like, I remember, like, as a kid, like, that was the part that really got me on the edge of my seat.
I can't think of the last time. It still holds up.
Yeah.
I think they just discovered it. They were kind of on the fly, and they've – just yeah. Also, you don't mess around on a Spielberg movie. When you work with Spielberg, I've worked with some people who have worked with Spielberg, and they said great things about him. But you gotta be A game all the time because they shoot fast.
And I feel like Steven Spielberg is the type that, like, yes, he makes, like, really good films. Like, when you look at, like, Schindler's List, but I think his best thing is, like just big blockbusters. Whereas, like you said, where did the T-Rex come from? I don't, like, who knows, like, but that's not what he's filming. Like, Steven Spielberg's making a movie, like, not necessarily a film, but, like, a movie, just a blockbuster where you watch and it's entertaining. And yeah, not all of it makes sense, but it works in the essence of this is a movie.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What were you going to say? I don't even remember what I was going to say.
I was going to say, you had a big question about the T-Rex.
Yeah, so, like, because I've watched the movie so many times, and, like, you can watch any of those, like, on YouTube, the CinemaSins and stuff like that, but, like, there's a part when the T-Rex first attacks the cars when they're stalled on the side of the road and the power goes out. It's a really cool scene. You know, he breaks out of his enclosure. Now, he's walking onto this drive path where the tracks are for the cars, and when he attacks the vehicles, he ends up pushing one of the vehicles over the edge, which is where he just broke out of. But you see the car go over a cliff and fall. And a lot of people are like, well, where did that cliff come from? Because he just came from that area and walked onto the track, like, where the road. So, like, he would have had to step up or like however, but apparently there's supposed to be like a moat there. So like, how would he get up there? You know what I mean? Because the car lands in a tree. So I did some research and I was like looking it up, and there's actually a YouTube series where this guy talks, I think specifically about Jurassic Park, like all the films. And he did some research and he said he found some like storyboards and stuff like that of how there was supposed to be a moat around the entire perimeter, but there were parts where the land would connect with the road just so they could put like a goat or whatever to lure the T-Rex so you could see it up close. So I think the way they wanted to shoot it was that he was walking on there and then later on you see the moat, but the way it's cut in the movie, and maybe because it's just so quick, it kind of just looks like there's land there and then all of a sudden it's just a moat there, which is like weird. So I feel like some people chalk that up to just movie mistake, and there is continuity errors all the times in movies, so who knows, but it would make more sense for there to be a moat there. There's moats with lions and tigers and all them.
Oh yeah. Oh.
So, and it, not necessarily like a water moat, but just like a pit, like, you know, bears and stuff. Like you go to the zoo, a lot of them have like pits in between the gate and their land that they can walk on.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is I find the most random data points in the history of the world for movies, and I never thought about that once.
Really? If you watch the scene again, like watch it, and you'll be like, wait, where did this come from? Like, how is he pushing this over the edge?
So they hadn't shown it in other scenes?
Well, the thing that's weird too, no, but there's no like definitive scene that shows like the enclosure like in like it from a certain angle so you could actually see if there's a moat or not. But I also do wonder that the cars come back on the track, but there's only one track. So is there a loop and then they turn back around and come back? Because why shouldn't they be all the way around? Unless they're on like a different side now. But then if they're on a different side, how's the goat still there?
That poor goat.
I know, poor goat. Just there for food.
I should watch out this. I should watch this movie, and since I love it, I'll just figure out how it works.
You should dissect it and try to figure it out for your film data.
I'll just debunk all the anti-motors.
Right. You know, just to see. I assume there's a loop and they loop back. But then also it's like, yeah, but if this is a tour, don't you want it to keep moving through?
If I can figure out how far Nick Cage ran in a bear suit on the Wicker Man remake, I can figure this one out.
I don't think it'd be too hard. They only see a few dinosaurs on their tour.
Yeah, I'm. You know what's funny? I love when Jeff Goldblum's like, I thought we were supposed to see dinosaurs, and Hammond's like, I hate this guy.
Yeah. What do they got in there? King Kong.
Oh, I mean, and you know what I love is Spielberg referenced the fight scene in King Kong between the T-Rex, and you should really do this if you haven't watched it. Just type in. Like the original King Kong, what, 33? Was that 31?
Yeah, 33.
Type that in and watch the T-Rex versus King Kong fight. And King Kong uses actual wrestling technique. He single legs a Tyrannosaurus Rex with proper form, like a wrestler. He single legs a Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's a really technical move that they pulled off with stop motion.
That's awesome.
I mean, you think it's just a stupid fight scene, but he legit single legs a T-Rex. It's when I wrote that article. I don't know if you remember. Did we podcast about this when I wrote about creature features?
I don't remember.
But I wrote about when that introduction of a scene. And you know what's interesting about Jurassic Park too? There's only about 15 minutes of dinosaurs in this movie.
Right.
Which, I mean, is what's the word? There seems like a lot more.
But to go with the article you just wrote recently about, like, you just did an article for Rotten Tomatoes about how movies and franchises, like horror movies specifically, the higher the kill count in the later movies, the lower the Rotten Tomatoes score. Yeah. And I feel like it's kind of the same with even Jurassic Park, where, like, more people die throughout the Jurassic Park series and more dinosaurs are shown, but it's not necessarily a good thing.
No, and I actually I tried to do a real deep dive into the series, and it just wasn't good enough. Like, I didn't even submit it into Rotten Tomatoes. But, I mean, I think the way these movies work is you need to have the T-Rex. So in the first one, the T-Rex, in the second one, in the third one, it's an abomination that they kill it.
Right.
In Jurassic World, the T-Rex comes out at the end, which is perfect, and fights the Indominus, makes it the good guy. And then in this one, you just completely lose the T-Rex to some stupid raptor thing.
Oh, that's
like a raptor. So I think, you know, you people say that you can't, you know, you can't return to the well, but people want to see the T-Rex. And people want to see the raptors. They don't want to see the raptors from the third one. They want to see the raptors from the first one. And you know, the raptors from the second one, that attack in the cornfield, that influenced A Quiet Place.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, because they just move silently through the cornfields and wipe people out.
Okay, so here, I know we're going to wrap up soon, but I do want to just mention, like, the other Jurassic Park movies, like you're talking about. Like, I wanted to like The Lost World a lot, and when I saw it, I thought it was okay. It wasn't my favorite. It didn't live up to the hype of the first one and stuff. But the more I've watched it, because I've seen it like a few times now, and like I do like it more. And maybe it's because I've been watching the Jurassic World movies that like I just don't like them that much. But The Lost World, I think, is still a decent – there's some decent stuff in that. Like the T-Rex attacking the RV is like one of the tensest moments on film that I've seen in a long time.
And that nice guy gets killed and ripped in half.
Yeah, and like that's the thing is like Eddie Carr, he's like this guy who's their friend, and he's risking his life to save Julianne Moore and Vince Vaughn and all them, and he actually does. He risks his life to save them from the RV, and like it's a wonderfully shot scene. It's action packed. It's tense. It's scary. And the same with the raptors. Like that one part where the raptors kind of just like invade the cornfields and attack all those guys. Like that's a, I love that shot.
I would say my favorite – I think one of my favorite moments of the franchise is when Jeff Goldblum runs into a room and then the raptor jumps through the glass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's a great bit. But there's also the gymnastics in the movie. And
that I didn't like.
Julianne Moore is one of my favorite actresses. But in this movie, she's very unlikable. So she's supposed to be this wildlife photographer or war photographer. Mm. And she just runs right up to stegosauruses and takes pictures.
Sorry, not to cut you off, but she talks about the smoking the cigarette. And she's like, put that out, that like they can attract scents and all this kind of stuff. But then she goes up and touches a stegosaurus.
Yeah, and just you're like, what? You don't do that. And then she brings the baby T-Rex into the I guess when I was watching it again, she brings the baby T-Rex into their van. Yeah. Their massive thing. So of course the T-Rexes are going to be going for her.
Yeah.
So she just makes some really weird decisions in this movie. And then Vince Vaughn lets all the dinosaurs free. And it kills a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And then you have, what, that one dude going away to go to the bathroom and be killed. But you also have the T-Rex smushing a guy, which is amazing. And the T-Rex in the waterfall and the raptors. So.
Well, that's why I think there's a lot of good with the movie, but there's also a lot of bad. I don't hate it as much as I did. Like, I never hated it, but I like it a little bit more now. And I think it's because there's still some really good moments in that where it's hard for me to find the good stuff in Jurassic Park 3 and the Jurassic World movies. Like, there's some stuff that I like, but overall, I just don't think they hold up. But I do agree with The Lost World not having a lot of likable characters. And that kind of – it sucks because, like, in Jurassic Park, like, Alan Grant is likable. And even Jeff Goldblum is a little rapey but likable. And, like, John Hammond because he's kind of, like, childlike and – and even the villain, like the villain is not – it's Dennis Nedry. He's goofy and funny at parts, whereas the villain, Pete Postlethwaite or whatever, and Peter Ludlow and all these other guys, like they're all like these kind of villainous kind of guys trying to take the dinosaurs off the island. But they're not like – they're not really likable that much. Pete Postlethwaite's okay, I guess, but the other ones aren't.
I like his buddy, Pete Postlethwaite's buddy.
Ajay?
Yeah. I felt like they were in it for decent reasons. And then
that's why I liked, like, he even has a conversation with Vince Vaughn when they're walking, and he was talking to Vince Vaughn about, like, you're that Earth first fella. Like, he knew that he's, like, this guy who, like, he knew he was the one who opened up all the pens for the dinosaurs to get out and stuff, because he knew who Vince Vaughn was. Like, Nick Van Owen was the character he was playing, but he was like, I know who you are. And then that's when he was, like, asking him, like, why do you want to kill a T-Rex? And Pete Postlethwaite was like, because, you know, I can't, like, he brings up the Everest. Like, why did you climb up to the top of Mount Everest if you knew you were going to die kind of thing? And, like, that's just his, like, that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to hunt the biggest dinosaur.
He's good at it, too.
Yeah.
Now, the one biggest plot hole is they leave the raptors out of the boat. So remember when the boat lands and everyone's dead?
Yeah.
And then the T-Rex busts out.
Yep.
Are we to assume...
Yeah, that was weird.
So are we to assume that raptors just did that and then dove off the boat?
See, I thought they were trying to say that the T-Rex did that, but, like, how would the T-Rex get everywhere? There was supposed to be, like, raptors everywhere, and they had the hand on the steering wheel that was, like, you know, just a hand. And, I mean, I assume that it would be raptors that would do that because the T-Rex wouldn't be able to get in there, but I don't know. Maybe that's some of the movie magic of Spielberg just saying, who cares?
Oh, so for us to conclude, I just want to say Sam Jackson was supposed to have a death scene in Jurassic Park, but because of the massive hurricane that had 165-mile-an-hour winds, the entire set got destroyed, so he couldn't do it. But when Ellie has his arm land on him, like, was he climbing the fence, and then the raptor jumped up and bit his arm off, and then dragged his body away with no blood? Was he upstairs, and then the arm fell? Was there an upstairs?
It might have been, well, because I know she bumps into... Like, isn't it like a locker or a cabinet or something like that? And then the arm comes out from behind it and hits her shoulder, and that's when she grabs it. So I thought maybe he was hiding back there or something and then got attacked. But I don't know if there was anything back there, you know what I mean? But I thought she bumps into a locker. I actually like Samuel L. Jackson dying off screen. Like, I actually like that whole reveal of the arm and stuff.
Oh, it's a great reveal. I just want to know how the arm dropped on her.
Yeah, that was weird. And I wonder, like, if they did film his death scene, how it would have happened. But I think, like, I don't know, like him going, I'm gonna go turn back the power. It's not that bad. It's right over there. And he just leaves, and then that's the last you see him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely effective. And also Rennie Harlan killed him off in Deep Blue Sea, just like
that's true.
Jurassic Park.
That shock death.
I'm gonna keep something a secret, but I got something big coming up for y'all. So I won't tell anybody, but I got something big coming up.
Ooh.
For movies, films, and flicks. But yeah, no, I kind of want to plot out how his arm got up there.
You should just do some Jurassic Park data and do like the tour vehicles, why they were on the same track going north and south or whatever. Then do the moat, and then do Ray Arnold.
How his arm got there?
Yep.
And then Jurassic World, how the boat got there.
Yeah.
I mean, the bodies were completely missing in Jurassic World.
No, you mean Lost World.
Oh, Lost World.
Jurassic World, there's too much to go off of that one.
I got a lot of work to do here. So I guess we'll get going to it. But do you have any final things to say? Any final plugs before we get going?
Plugs? Yeah, I'll just plug. I do a lot of audio dramas at 7lamb Productions. So if you want to go to 7lamb.com or blogtalkradio.com/7lamb, and you can find all of our podcasts on there. We have horror, Paralyzed is our horror fiction, End of All Hope is a sci-fi fiction, and they're all audio dramas. So they're basically just 20-30 minute episodes of just a storyline that comes out in seasons, so you can check those out. And I mean, Paralyzed is our most popular one right now. So season 2 just ended, if you guys want to check that out.
Awesome. And then, head to iTunes. Give all these ratings, movies, films, and flicks. Make sure to head there and give us a 5-star rating. Or, you know, whatever you want. We can't say that. But make sure to give us a rate, review, and subscribe. Also, head to movies, films, and flicks. Check out all of our dumb data. Just click on the link. Also, check out all of our new stuff. And listen to our old podcast. Robert has joined us on podcasts about the Alien franchise, Bond franchise. You've created horror films with us. You've created romantic comedies with us.
Yep.
We did the 1960s. Oh, so
Squid Lake.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. So I was teaching my students about the 1960s, and I used our podcast for reference. I didn't tell them I have one because I want them listening. But I use the 10 movies, and I walk through the 60s with the 10 influential movies. So if you listen to it, you'll get a really great history about 1960s cinema. So make sure to check that out. But, I guess we'll close out. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Robert Lamb, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week when we're covering Bad Times at the El Royale and Apostle.